racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Breaking news. The regular PGA Tour season, well, it's officially over. Hi, and welcome to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf. I'm Bob Bubka. So excited to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., better known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Well, the last of the 45 continual weeks of PGA Tour events, Jay, is over.
Well, and now here we go, Bob, to the playoffs. It's going to be very interesting. No gap time, no time off. Not just another week, and we'll get to them later in the show.
Yeah, and first we have to talk about that Wyndham Championship. It was the last official event and the last chance to earn enough FedEx Cup points to get into the FedEx playoffs. And very popular winner as far as I'm concerned, Jay.
Oh, no question about it, Bob. Brant Snedeker, when you look at how he's a popular guy, good guy, and the fact that he started with a 59, Bob, and had the lead from wire to wire, we don't see that very often. He was only the second wire to wire winner this season, and you kind of got a feeling that he might not get there as Sunday progressed, but CT Pan making a mistake. And Snedeker coming through, really solid win for him.
You know, Jay, this may sound a little crazy to our listeners. I want your take on it. In some way, I think when you open up with a 59, there's more pressure on you, because if you don't go on the victory, the tagline would be, well, not just Brett Snedeker didn't win, Brett Snedeker opened with a 59 and didn't win.
Oh, no, I think it's a ton of pressure. He becomes the 10th guy in PGA Tour history to hit that magic mark at 59, and there's no doubt about it. It's not commonplace. It's still something incredible, but, you know, most guys would rather have that W and what comes along with it than a 59 on a scorecard. And Brant Snedeker took advantage of it, progressed well, always been a good iron player. Big up and down on the backside for birdie to kind of solidify it until, like I said, CT Pan makes the mistake and hits it out of bounds. I will say this about CT Pan. His wife caddies for him. He showed no emotion on the 18th hole when he hit that ball out of bounds. I mean, a lot of guys would have, you know, broken their driver, cracked their driver over their caddy's head. But he was just ice cold.
Wow, not a good idea to crack your driver over your caddy's head. Probably even a worse idea when the caddy's your wife. Probably CT would have went on to win that event had he had a vertical groove driver in the bag, because they go so straight. But anyway, the victory is the ninth for Brent Snedeker. I would think that is probably the quietest nine victories on the PGA Tour in history.
That's a number that surprises me. I would have said maybe five or six, but he's a guy that does get it done usually when he's on the lead. He did win the FedEx Cup. People forget that because it's not necessarily at the status yet of a major championship, but he did win the FedEx Cup, and it's his first win. His first win was at the Wyndham in 2007 at Forest Oaks Country Club, and now he wins again this year at Old School Sedgefield, and he's the guy on those ads. He's the Wyndham ambassador. I mean, Wyndham couldn't have dialed it up better. I guess it just follows from the PGA Championship being so great to the Wyndham being great for Wyndham.
Yeah, and I always remember how you refer to anybody that wins that FedEx Cup and the $10 million in that it gives them a little bit of a cushion.
That was Justin Thomas, not me.
It's amazing, you know, $10 million back in 2013, but I think this victory here you know, after winning 11 years earlier, as you mentioned, in a different golf course. Let's give a listen to what Snedeker had to say regarding that victory.
Really emotional and stressful week, to say the least, to start the way I did at a tournament that means so much to me. You know, your first tour win, which I don't care, yes, anybody out here on tour, it's always special to them. And to be able to come back here year after year and get close several times, not be able to do it, to be a Wyndham guy now for my 13th year with them, wanting so desperately to win this tournament, it was just a lot of emotion this week.
Isn't that amazing, Jay? You know as well as anybody that winning on the PGA Tour, extremely difficult. Trying to win on the PGA Tour when you have an injury, almost impossible.
Well, and it, for a lot of guys, as you know, Bob, it becomes so frustrating that, you know, we've seen a lot of guys lead to career ending because it gets so frustrating. It's not easy to fight through it. You never know when you're going to be right, week to week maybe. And this is a huge win for Brant Snedeker. I mean, you know, a guy that, you know, probably needed this. And, you know, as he said, you called it earlier, he said it himself, there was added pressure after his start with the 59. So kudos to Sneds.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Jay, with this victory so late in the season, with the reputation of being an outstanding putter, any chance that Jim Furyk is taking a hard, long look at Snedeker to be on the upcoming Ryder Cup team?
Well, you know, an interesting note on Jim Furyk, the captain, he had his first top finish in 2 years, shooting 63, playing amongst Brant Snedeker. So he had a close-up view. I mean, I think the Phil and Tiger are kind of the lock, and then you got to figure out, you know, maybe who's next. It's going to be interesting because there are different choices and different styles, and Snedeker, I think he certainly deserves a look, doesn't he, Bob?
I would agree with that. I think hard, long looks being taken at Bryson DeChambeau seems to be one of Tiger's favorites. That might be enough to get him on that team. Looking at that victory.
Tiger and Sneds like each other, too.
Yeah, well, you know, they both got a lot of money. Maybe, you know, that's why you and I like each other so much, because we don't have any money.
Touche.
But anyway, you know, players who have posted sub 60 scores on the PGA Tour and go on to win that week. Pretty interesting list. Al Geiberger got it done back in 1977. I was out in the desert when David Duval won that 1999 Career Builder Challenge. Stuart Appleby, and his was in the fourth and final round down at the Greenbrier. And before Sneds, Justin Thomas, 2017, Sony Open in Hawaii. So not a lot of people have gone on to victory. Well, not a lot of people have broken 60. So obviously there would not be a lot of people that goes on that would be able to go on to victory. So now the season is finished and the playoffs begin. We're going to take a look at them after a short break.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play The Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. Glad you're with us. Talking a little golf, talking a little playoff. That's what's happening on the PGA Tour. Jay Randolph Jr. along with my man Bob Bupka, the voice of golf. And Bob, it's playoff time. You and I were there together when they got this whole thing going a number of years ago. And It's seen a lot of different modifications. There's more to come for next year, but it's playoff time.
Yeah, it's playoff time and exciting time, and I think next year is going to be extra special. They're going to eliminate one of the playoff events, plus with the moving of the PGA Championship to May, we're going to be able to get all the serious golf concluded prior to that Labor Day weekend and the official, unofficial start of college football and professional football. Time now, let's talk about the playoffs. They are going to begin this week at the Northern Trust, used to be Barclays, at a great golf course, Ridgewood Country Club. 125 players are going to show up there. And, Jay, after the week, they're going to cut to 100 players and ties. A lot of pressure on a lot of guys.
Oh, no doubt about it. And then you got guys, you know, that are trying to move up as far as they can, because the second event, the Dell Technology, starts with that 100 that you mentioned that'll move on after the Northern Trust, and then it gets down to 70. This is now the Dell Technologies, the old Deutsche Bank outside of Boston. So, that's another thing you got to remember as you watch the playoffs, is that that number 70 is always in play until you get to third event.
Yeah, and you mentioned Deutsche Bank. There was a name associated with that event by a gentleman by the name of Seth Waugh. And
yeah,
a little bit of a tease here on that name. It's going to come up big time later in the show, and I think in its context, it's going to surprise a lot of people. All right, you said after the Dell Technologies, we're down to the 70 players and ties, and then we go to the third playoff event, the BMW, and then we really get serious, Jay, because you start with 70 there, and then the top 30 and ties go to the final field to play down in Atlanta. Just a great golf course at East Lake, and the field will be reseeded according to points total coming into that event.
Yeah, and a great place to do it, as you said, East Lake. If you don't know the story of what had happened to that community and what some people put together down there to change the whole, to show you what golf can do, not only you have a PGA Tour event, but changing a community, Bob. There are other examples of it around the United States. I wish there was more of them, of a community that decided to adopt golf and make it kind of the driving focus of revitalizing an area.
Well, very well said there, Jay. I can distinctly remember the first time I approached East Lake many, many years ago, and not far from the clubhouse there, the home that Bobby Jones grew up in. And not sugarcoating it in any way, that entire neighborhood around there was in total disarray. And then a gentleman by the name of Cousins had this vision, and boy, oh boy, you drive there now, it's a model example of what hard work, dollars well spent, and dedicated people in the community can accomplish if they put their mind to it. I mean, it is now an outstanding place to live, whereas before you probably would consider having a 24-hour security guard outside your home. That's how dangerous it was.
No, it's phenomenal, and it's also a phenomenal golf course and a great way to finish. Somebody's going to win the $10 million bonus. Plus, if he wins the Tour Championship itself, he also gets the prize money that comes along with that. The bonus pool is $35 million that will get distributed throughout the players, the 125. And the total prize money for the four events, Bob, is $32 million. Oh, my. What would my friend Sam Snead say? Ooh.
Sam Snead would say somebody committed a bank robbery here. There's no way they're giving out that kind of money. But boy, oh boy, when you hear those dollars that Jay just expounded upon, it certainly gives you many, many reasons to want to be part of the playoffs. And as we mentioned earlier, Brent Snedeker, well, he won the FedEx Cup in 2013.
Somebody who's been fortunate enough to win before, I realize how important it is to be in good position going into the playoffs and also to play well when you're there. And so, to be perfectly frank, I didn't have any chance at all. As far back as I was, I didn't see it happening. And after this week, I feel like I have a chance. You know, I feel like I kind of put myself in a position to where with 3 good weeks going to East Lake, you never know what's going to happen.
Well, he's certainly confident, Jay, and why wouldn't he be? He went from 80th to 30th in the FedEx Cup points with that victory this past weekend.
Well, and that's the huge jump you can make. And as you said, the reseeding, if you get to Atlanta, I mean, you know, I think that's significant. That was one of the things I noticed immediately down the stretch as they were talking about looking at that movement, a 50-place movement. You know, he goes from hoping to make trying to do everything he can to make the third event in that 80th spot to now knowing he's got, you know, he doesn't have to worry, but he's definitely in the third event. And now his focus has got to be on keeping that 30th and moving up better.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we know, Jay, Sned's certainly a very streaky player.
Yep.
And it's safe to say right now that he is on a good streak.
You're right, Bob. He is rolling. Somebody not on such a good streak. Sergio missed the playoffs for the first time. He'll be all right. Don't worry about the money situation. He was fighting to try and make it down the stretch. Just didn't do enough, Bob. You know, almost like a hangover year, if you will, after winning the Masters. It'll be interesting to see what Sergio's got. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of time left, but, you know, it'll be curious the next couple of years to see how well he plays.
Yeah, Jay, and I'm going to give Sergio a little bit of a pass here. A lot of changes in his life, major changes. Got married. Now he's a father. I mean, you know, that takes a little getting used to. I agree with you wholeheartedly that probably a little bit of a hangover, finally winning that first major that many, many people said that he was never going to win, and it was the Masters, which obviously Ballesteros, a big inspiration in the life of Sergio Garcia. To win that Masters had to feel awfully good for Sergio. I kind of agree with you. I look for Sergio over the next couple of weeks, probably going to play a couple of times on the European Tour, going to work on getting his game sharp. I think he'll be a tough out in September when we get to France for the Ryder Cup, and a good Ryder Cup performance will set him up well for next season.
No question about that. Harris English talked about it. You know, Harris English was trying to win this golf tournament, but as he said, in the back of his mind, he knew that he was also slicing and dicing that top 125. So it had been a tough year for Harris English, a former tour winner, but he moves on into the top 25, and so does Nick Taylor and Bob. They make the playoffs, and right now, heading into the playoffs, Dustin Johnson has the lead. Justin Thomas is right behind him. Brooks Koepka is in third. Justin Rose in fourth. And Bubba Watson, who had such a good early start, is in fifth.
Anybody that wanted to be critical of the point system, you know, I just want to run this up the Jay Randolph flagpole. I mean, Brooks Koepka wins the U.S. Open, then goes on and wins the PGA Championship, and he's only in third place with points. I mean, good golly, what do you have to do?
Well, you know, that is a unique situation. I don't think there's any doubt about it. As we've talked about before, the PGA Tour does not control, I think, have any control really in the five biggest events, the four majors and the Ryder Cup. It is a little odd. They do have a point system. People play by it. He is in third. But it does beg the question, how much are the majors worth?
Well, one point we have to make is, Brooks Koepka was not able to compete down at Augusta, had that wrist injury. That probably has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, he didn't play early in the year, so there you go. I mean, this is what you do season long, and it rewards those players that have the best play in the most events.
Well, there's a couple of guys that played well enough this season. They're going to be brand new PGA Tour members next year. A couple of guys that we've mentioned quite often on the Grill Room. Who are they, Jay?
I was going to ask you. No, they're Joaquin Niemann and Kiradesh Appibarnrat. That's right, Appibarnrat.
Very good.
I did pretty good there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They made enough FedEx Cup points to be at least equal to number 125 on the points list, so they have earned fully exempt status on the PGA Tour season for 2018 and 2019, that season, the rollover season. Both, Bob, I mean, Niemann has the potential to be a superstar. He's clearly got big-time game. And Appibarnrat doesn't look like he should be out there playing, but he finds a way to get it in the hole, and he's a pretty darn good player. He's played well in majors.
Yeah, he really has. And maybe some of our listeners wondering what's the biggest advantage to earning fully exempt status. The way I look at it, you control your destiny. You kind of can set your schedule. You can play the golf courses that you think that you're going to do well or maybe have done well in the past. And, it really is huge. It's not to be taken lightly. You just ask anybody that doesn't finish in that 125, they'll be quick to tell you that was their goal at the start of the year. It kind of guarantees them a job for the next year.
Well, you just nailed it, Bob, especially for these two guys, Niemann and Appibarnrat, who are going to play internationally. So the fact that they can plot their schedule as it relates to the PGA Tour and know they're going to get an event is gigantic for them.
All right. We had some additional golf taking place over the weekend at a magnificent venue. The United States Amateur Championship was conducted over at Pebble Beach. And, of course, the U.S. Amateur, the oldest golf competition in the United States. First time it was contested was way back in 1895, a day before the first U.S. Open was ever played. And to put it mildly, we certainly had a surprise winner.
Well, it goes to the first ever Norwegian to win the United States Amateur. Oklahoma State's Victor Hovland, wonderful play. I had a very good friend of mine here from St. Louis who does my Sunday show in St. Louis with me, Skip Berkmeyer, who made match play and had a really tough match in the first round, said the golf course was just playing really difficult, playing hard. And this was a great final match. Congratulations to Victor. Bob, let's hear from Victor after his win.
It's really special. As I mentioned earlier, I've only won once before, and to win the U.S. Amateur as my second win is really cool. It's hard to top that. I just hope it's the start of something great.
I mean, really an outstanding young man, as I could tell, very, very humble, very delightful smile. Hasn't had it that easy. Lost his mom when he was only 13 years old. But, boy, what a victory to hoist that Havemeyer Trophy over your head. And every time I see Pebble Beach, whether I'm there in person or whether I see it on TV, and we will be there. The Grill Room will be there next June, the United States Open 2019 edition, going to be contested at Pebble Beach. I always think back to a little reception. I believe the year was 2000, and it was Jack Nicklaus. He had just completed play in the U.S. Open, and that Friday night, at that reception, who shows up but Kathleen Crosby, Jay, the widow of Bing Crosby, somebody that certainly loved golf. Matter of fact, played a round of golf in Spain and then walked off the 18th green and passed away, Bing did. But Kathleen was wearing that famous green velvet fedora. And I said, boy, you're never going to have a chance like this. And I walked up. I said, Mrs. Crosby, would you mind if I tried that hat on? And she surprised me by saying yes. I took it. I put it on. I tried to sing. I didn't sing any better, Jay. It did not work for me.
Well, it was worth a try. It's time to groove up with Vertical Groove Golf on the PGA Tour Champions. Kenny Perry, who uses the vertical groove driver and loves it. Mark Calcavecchia, who's playing that vertical groove three wood, and everybody should. Both had time for fifth finishes at the Dick's Sporting Goods Open. Dougie Garwood, who led after the first round with a 64, a very devoted vertical groove guy, he finished tied for 19th.
And, you know, each year at the Tour Championship, Jay, the Payne Stewart Award is presented by the Southern Company. This year, that honor is going to go to somebody that certainly deserves it, by the name of Bernhard Lange, a very worthy recipient of that Payne Stewart Award.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play the Grill Room Golf Show and you'll be connected. Don't go anywhere. Bob's interview with Ted Bishop, the 38th president of the PGA of America and member of the Indiana Golf Hall of Fame, is next. Bishop's thoughts on whether or not, get ready for this, folks, the PGA Tour and the PGA of America might become one organization once again. The pros, the cons. Very interesting conversation. You don't want to miss this next.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to The Grill Room.
Joining us now in The Grill Room, former president of the PGA of America, Ted Bishop, and what precipitated me requesting some time with Ted. A couple of months ago, I started hearing some faint whispers about the possibility of maybe the PGA of America rejoining forces with the PGA Tour. Those whispers continue to get louder. I show up at the PGA Championship, ask some people if they've heard anything along those lines. Most of the responses were no, and not only that, that it would never, ever happen. But I saw valid reasons for it happening. And then I had the good fortune of reading your article in Morning Read, which I enjoyed immensely. So I thought we'd try and shed a little more light on this subject. That's why I asked you, Ted. And when did you first become aware at least a remote possibility that this may transpire?
Well, Bob, I actually I got a text from one of the people who were with the media last week at the PGA Championship at Belrive, and asked me if I had heard anything about these rumblings concerning a merger with the PGA Tour and the PGA of America. And honestly, it kind of took me back. I would say it wasn't anything that we had really thought or talked about back in 13 and 14 when I was the president of the PGA. But honestly, the more I thought about it over the next couple of days, like you, I felt like there were a lot of reasons why this made sense. And, you know, that's what kind of prompted me to write the story for Morning Read that I did.
You know, my argument right away, the resistance that I ran into was, well, the PGA of America would never, ever go for something like that. And I followed up with, well, there's 29,000 members of the PGA of America. And if certain benefits are explained to them, which may be achieved by a merger of this nature, that in sheer numbers, the PGA of America would listen to its membership and be forced to go in that direction. Am I accurate in that assessment?
I think you're very accurate, and I think that would be the key thing. You know, what could happen to PGA members that would make it better for them if this happened? And, you know, while the tour is not set up exactly like the PGA is, Bob, they're both 501c6s. PGA Tour players basically have a deferred compensation program, and they've got a health insurance program where they contribute a little bit, and then the tour makes up the difference. And any type of a retirement benefit and a health insurance program are two things that PGA members have been screaming for decades. And, you know, so I would say on the surface, if there's any possibility that some type of a merger could possibly put PGA of America members into a different situation under the umbrella of the PGA Tour that would offer a couple of benefits like that, then it would be absolutely huge for PGA members. And certainly this would be, you know, a very popular thing. And I, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, we go full circle. It was 50 years ago, 1968, that the PGA of America ran the PGA Tour. And they were one organization. And Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and some other high-profile tour players, as you know, Bob, decided that maybe the players would be better off if they broke away from the PGA of America and formed their own tour. And I think that, you know, worked out pretty well. Unfortunately, I think right now the climate among the rank and file of the PGA of America is that our association has become very corporate. We've got a lot of money with all these TV deals that we've done, most notably the extension of the Ryder Cup rights with NBC. And PGA members are not really feeling, you know, like they're a benefactor of much of these things that are happening. And, you know, I think there's a possibility that the tour might be more creative. Quite honestly, they might be more qualified with the way they're structured from a leadership standpoint, from a business standpoint, to figure out a way to beat this inurement issue, which is the thing that's held the money back, so to speak, away from PGA members over the years.
You know, it's amazing. When I started to think about this, I said that my first reaction is, well, why would the PGA Tour be interested? And of course, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that they then would finally have a major that they've been craving ever since I've been in golf.
Well, not only would they have the major, but they would have the Ryder Cup. And so they would have the two preeminent competitions that the PGA of America has right now. But I think the other interesting dynamic right now, Bob, you know, the PGA is looking for a new CEO. And, you know, another name that surfaced last week at the PGA Championship in regard to this is Seth Waugh. And Seth Waugh is an independent director currently with the PGA of America. He was a former CEO of Deutsche Bank, and he was actually, well, during his time as CEO of Deutsche Bank is when they entered into that relationship that Deutsche Bank had for a long time with PGA Tour. He was also very instrumental with Jay Monahan and his involvement as tournament director of that Deutsche Bank event for many, many years. And of course, as we know, Jay's now the current commissioner of the PGA Tour. So Waugh and Monahan have a very close relationship. And now all of a sudden, I think that kind of plays into this and even adds more intrigue to the possibility that maybe this merger is in the discussion stages and possibly might it take place. I mean, you really kind of have to ask yourself, why would Seth Waugh want to become the CEO of the PGA of America? And I think if he had a chance to broker this deal, bring the two associations together, which, by the way, would make them, without a doubt, the most powerful entity in golf. I think they would have the ability to market and grow the game like no association has ever before, and probably have more influence worldwide on the game than anybody ever has.
We're talking with Ted Bishop, and it's pretty amazing, because when I was thinking of who's going to replace Pete Pavakwa, you know, it takes an unusual set of skills to come into that position. I know Seth Waugh very well. I know what a golf nut that he really is. Loves to play the sport. You know, his executive ability speaks for itself. So even though I couldn't possibly think of a name, that name makes all the sense in the world. And adding the relationship with Jay Monahan, I would think that this initiative is gaining traction as we go along.
Well, it was certainly, you know, seen that way to me. I mean, I think the stars are lining up for at least a hell of a discussion.
We're talking once again with Ted Bishop, former president of the PGA. I would assume that the European Tour, which has the, you know, the Ryder Cup every 2 years, as you know so well, would be agreeable to this, because it would make the Ryder Cup even bigger, if that's possible, than it is now. So a direct result would be benefits to the European Tour.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you don't have to go back too far, Bob, to where actually – the PGA of Great Britain and Ireland owned the rights to the Ryder Cup. And, you know, that changed. They underwent some financial challenges, and you know, they actually liquidated a percentage of their, a big percentage of their ownership in that event to Ryder Cup Europe. And obviously the European Tour, as you mentioned. So to think that the structure of the Ryder Cup and the ownership of the Ryder Cup, you know, is going to stay the way it is forever, I think, you know, is probably not realistic. And I just think right now, this is a perfect time for something like this to happen. And the main thing is, you know, how will it or will it benefit members of the PGA of America? And I think, honestly, our organizations have become a little bit stale right now. I think the one thing the tour has done a great job of is really service and take care of their members probably better than the PGA of America has done. And a lot of people lose sight of the fact too, Bob, that PGA Tour players right now are members of the PGA of America. So, I mean, there's just, in my opinion, this is one of these things, the more you talk about it, the more it makes sense. You know, one thing that I mentioned in my story, you know, the tour is set up like a business, and the PGA of America is truly set up like a nonprofit association. And, you know, in our governance model at the PGA of America, for example, as you know, we have 41 sections. Each of those sections has two votes, two delegates at our annual meeting. And what that means is you have a crazy setup right now where you've got three small sections in New York, Central, Western, and Northeastern New York, that have got a total of six votes, versus the largest, one of the largest sections in the PGA of America, the Carolinas, you know, which is combined of North and South Carolina, they have a total of two votes. So, I mean, we would never run a democracy in our country from an electoral vote standpoint anywhere as close to what the PGA's current governance model does. We've tried to blow that thing up and rebuild it for the past couple of decades, and we've not been successful in being able to get that done. The PGA Tour manages over 30 properties nationwide, and you know, they do it very profitably, very successfully. The PGA of America manages two properties, and they lose money. The PGA Tour hires obviously nothing but PGA professionals to run their properties, so there's already an employment component in place, and you know, it makes all the sense in the world.
You know, Ted, as I let you go, I have no real skin in this game other than the relationships that I've had for majority of my life with club professionals. I think they're maybe the most unappreciated aspect of all of golf. I mean, they work long hours. They make the game so enjoyable for so many people. They take youngsters and mold them into future golfers. A lot of them even get molded into becoming a club pro. So my position is anything that could possibly help the club professionals in America get a better deal, so to speak, I'm behind that 100%.
Well, I agree with you. And the last thing I would say too, Bob, there's no greater marketing machine in golf than the PGA Tour. And for all those club pros to be able to have the initiatives and programs like PGA Junior League, Drive, Chip and Putt, Get Golf Ready, to be able to have those things in front of the consumer every single week of the year versus just 2 weeks of the year when you have the PGA Championship and the Ryder Cup, it's got to be great for the club professionals, and it's got to be great for the game in general.
Well, I enjoy your contributions to Morning Read. You're a valuable source of information. More than that, I'm proud to call you a friend. Thanks for spending some time in the Grow Room, Ted, and we'll keep our ear to the ground and see where this takes us.
Okay, Bob, always a pleasure talking with you.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Well, Bob, it would be fascinating. You know, everything goes in circles, it seems. I think it was 1968 when the two split, and there's a lot of people think this is going to happen.
Well, you're right about that, Jay. Heard a lot of chatter prior to the PGA Championship. Had my ear to the ground while I was in St. Louis. That led to connecting with Ted Bishop, the former president. And when he mentioned the name Seth Waugh as possibly being the next head man at the PGA of America, there's a long relationship with Seth Waugh and Jay Monahan. Just keep those facts in your head. It could happen. We don't know. We'll just have to wait and see.
That's it for this week.
So on behalf of our executive producer, Janice Self, Jay Randolph Jr., and myself, Bob Bupka, please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.